This is Mass Timber Today, and I'm Ann Coven. This podcast explores the opportunities and challenges of mass timber with experts in the design, building, and forestry sectors to shed light on the question, what is the future of mass timber construction? In this episode, I'm speaking with Lacey Rose with the County of Renfrew. Lacey is a registered professional forester with the province of Ontario. In this episode, we investigate where the wood used in mass timber comes from in Canada and how Lacey plays a part in ensuring this wood supply is sustainable and what sustainable forestry really means. This conversation will help builders and architects contextualize the origins of the wood they use. Lacey, you are well known in the forest sector for your work as a professional forester with government and industry. And you are a leader for women in forestry, in the forest industry, as well as for young foresters. So why don't you tell our listeners how you became interested in forests and how it became a part of your career, your practice, and your life?
Thanks, Anne. Forests are definitely part of my life in all aspects, work, life, and play. I grew up in the forest, but I didn't know anything about forestry, so it wasn't an obvious career choice for me. But I have been a registered professional forester working in Ontario since 2008 now. Why did I become a forester? I knew I loved being outside and I was interested in wildlife. And luckily, someone asked me if I'd ever considered a career in forestry when I was trying to figure out what to do with my life. And if they hadn't, I don't know what I would be doing right now. That was the only way that I knew about it. So being a forester requires an education, and I went to the University of New Brunswick and did my Bachelor of Science in Forestry. And I've been working for the County of Renfrew for the last 11 years, managing the forest that they own. And since I moved to this area, it's become really easy to advocate for the sector because I see how invested everyone is in it. Some of our mills are in multi-generation situations. One is in their seventh generation of the family. So I can say with confidence that they're in it for the long haul and have the best interests of the forest in mind.
What are you currently doing in your work, Lacey, that is related to forests and by way of extension to mass timber that our listeners will be interested in hearing about?
Well, I'm not directly connected to mass timber yet, but I'm hoping that I'll learn from you that it's coming and will benefit our local wood sector soon. But my job is to sustainably manage the forest that's owned by the County of Renfrew. And I have worked on Crown land as well, the bigger picture of forestry in Ontario. So what does that mean, sustainably manage the forest? It means that before any tree is harvested, we have a long-term forest management plan put in place that's gone through public and First Nations consultation and lays out what we're going to do and how it's sustainable. And then an operational plan gets prepared that puts in rules and protection measures into place for each specific area and outlines any follow-up work that we need to do to make sure the forest grows back. We're also a certified forest, and I'm a registered professional forester, so we're obligated to follow a long list of laws and standards to make sure that we're taking good care of the forest. And that carries on to the actual harvesting of trees as well. So when a consumer purchases a wood product that is marked as certified, or an architect designs a mass timber building made from certified wood, they can be assured that it came from a sustainably managed forest that someone like me is responsible for. And that's making sure that future generations will be able to derive the same benefits from the forest.
Do you have any advice to give architects and builders who want to ensure that the wood they are using is coming from a sustainable source?
Absolutely. So, like I just mentioned, certified wood comes from certified forests that have to live up to very high standards of practice. But in my experience with Ontario's forestry in general, especially on public land, it's that laws are in place. A lot of laws are in place that also ensure a very high standard of practice. The other part of that is that the public consultation that I mentioned is required. And that means that if someone has a concern, or say an architect just wants to learn more or see these forestry practices with their own eyes, they can. You can drive out in the bush and see it yourself, or you can contact whoever is responsible for managing the forest and just express that you want to know more. And there's local citizens committees that are made up of interested people and a number of other ways to see what's going on out there. I would definitely recommend that. Try to get out on a tour with a forester so you can see forests at different stages of management and learn all about the steps and level of care that go into managing forests. I can promise you it's hard to find anyone who cares more about forests than the people who work in them.
What are some key points, Lacey, that you wish everyone knew about wood as a resource in Canada?
Well, there's some really simple points that I wish everyone knew. The first one is that trees don't live forever, contrary to popular belief. For example, black spruce in the boreal forest, which makes up most of Canada's forests, usually live to be about 120 years old. And in people years, that seems like a lot, but in the tree world, that's not very long. 200 years would be really old for a black spruce to live. And that's because they either die of old age, they get outcompeted by their neighbors. It's a tree world out there. They might get attacked by a pest or get burned or blown down. Basically, forests are always changing. And when that happens, when a tree dies, carbon gets released into the air and the soil. But if we harvest trees before that happens, the carbon gets stored into wood products. So that's what forestry is all about. I also wish that people knew that we're legally required to make sure that trees grow back when we're managing forests on public land. And when said wood products are harvested, the forest sector pays for and makes sure that trees get planted or that the forest is naturally regenerating the way that it should be. And another big thing is I wish that people knew that forestry does not equal deforestation in Canada. So when you see that in the news, become skeptical and just take a minute to Google what actually happens when forests are harvested. We want to make sure that forests stay as forests because that's what will keep the sector going. And probably the last important point is that wood is our only renewable natural resource. And if we choose wood over non-renewables, we can do that knowing that everyone in the future will be able to make the same choice.
One of the questions we get a lot at the Institute is sustainable forest management is a complex topic. People just don't get what it is. So when you as a forester explain sustainable forest management to an architect or an engineer or someone who has no familiarity with forests or forestry, how do you approach this conversation?
Yeah, so I always pretend whenever I talk about anything to do with forestry that it's like you're talking to a fifth grader because forestry folks are not very good at communicating and we use big words like silviculture and shelterwood that don't mean anything to anyone else. So the word sustainable in general, I think, is overused and doesn't carry a lot of meaning with it because of that. So when I try to put that into other words of what that means, it means to me that the actions that I'm taking today in the forest, can I say yes when asked the question if everyone in the future will be able to derive the same benefits that we are today? So we are enjoying nature. We are enjoying wildlife and providing what wildlife needs to thrive. We are generating economic benefits for our communities. Will that always be the case? And you have to think about all of that with every action that you take. So there's a lot of math behind it to make sure that you are harvesting the appropriate amount of forest. In a lot of cases, we're under harvesting, but we need to know that. And you need to make sure that you have enough old growth out there. You need to make sure that you have enough young forest out there. And you need to make sure that you are growing pine back if you're cutting pine. It's basically just considering the future implications of every action that you take in the forest.
You're a forester with the Renfrew County, and you manage forests So what does that mean? How do you do it?
Well, there is a lot of steps in the process, I can tell you that much, but let's run through it. So we talked about the long-term forest management plan. That takes about 2 years to prepare. And there's long-term modeling, making sure that what we're doing today is not going to have an adverse effect as long as 150 years from now. So the amount of forest that you have today, say in white pine, you will continue to have that or even working towards a more natural level if humans weren't there. So we're always trying to emulate natural patterns in the forest. So that's the long-term plan. Then we get to the operational stage. And first of all, someone like me, in my case, me, goes out into the forest and we collect data, making sure that the inventory that we have on hand in the long-term plan matches what's out there in the forest. So I'm looking at counting, writing down what kinds of trees, what age of trees, what kind of trees are underneath the trees even. So a very high level of detail. And then deciding if it is in fact the right time to do a harvest. And then it's the question, well, what kind of harvest? And that depends on the species of trees. So, you know, this is where the long forestry degree comes into effect. And knowing the requirements of each tree species and how it would react and succeed naturally is what we're trying to emulate with forestry. So, okay, yes, check. We've decided it's the right time to do a harvest. Then, where I work, we actually, a tree marker, which oftentimes is me as well, will go out and individually assess each tree, putting paint on the ones to be harvested. And also marking for retention any that are special. So we're looking for bird's nests, we're looking for woodpecker cavities, we're looking for water features that need to be protected, and many, many other values out there in the forest, making sure that they all get the protection that they need. And then we have the actual operation would take place, and then the people who are actually doing the cutting would be going out, but also someone else, like me, would be supervising the operation, making sure that all the rules are being followed. So it's really a lot of boots on the ground, a lot of different stages. And then after the harvest is when the work's not done, then we might have to do tree planting. And that's a whole other series of workers that are out there preparing for implementing and then following up on the regenerating forest. So, you know, it's not just a, hey, let's cut some trees down today kind of situation. And I think that is probably a really valuable thing for anyone to know who thinks about wood products, is that a lot of effort went into getting that 2x4 or mass timber pillar in front of you. And I think that is definitely something that would reassure people about the choice that they're making.
Although you're a forester and not a mass timber expert, what about the mass timber supply chain from forest to building? What are the key friction points and how do you see us solving them?
Yeah, that's a good point. When we harvest an area in the forest, we can't just take species and products that we want. You have to follow the harvest prescription that's prepared by the registered professional forester, and that has the future forest goals in mind. So for every tree that leaves the forest, every bit of that tree must be used. The good quality and solid logs go to the sawmill. The defective, lower quality logs go to a pulp or paper mill. All the bark, chips, and dust generated at those facilities must also find homes. So it's complicated and it can be problematic because, as I mentioned, Canada isn't as far along in the market development as some countries, but there's so much excitement happening right now. We're hearing all about mass timber. We're hearing about bioenergy. We're hearing about clothing being able to be made from wood. With a plastic ban, I have very high hopes that I'll start seeing more things that make me smile, like the used to be plastic tab on a bread bag now being made out of wood. Yay. We can all celebrate these choices as, you know, something that's renewable, reusable, recyclable, compostable. But it can be difficult. So if we can't sell that poplar pulp, for example, it could mean that we're unable to manage an entire area. You can't just take what you want. You have to take the bad with the good. And hopefully these new wood markets will someday be implemented and be able to really help that along. Another friction point would be the price of fuel. It's affecting everyone. So distance to processing and market is very important. For example, if there was to be a mass timber manufacturing plant here in Renfrew County, if it can't use the species that of trees that we grow in Renfrew County, then it's not really the best case scenario for our local wood market or reducing transportation distances. So hopefully that is on the radar of those very smart people who are developing mass timber products. And of course, another friction point that's affecting every sector right now, I think, is labor. We're having a hard time finding people to work in the woods and mills and trucking these days. And the solution to that is outreach by the forest sector to make sure that people know that that's a choice that's available to them. But it also means that the wood sector has to be competitive because we have to be able to compete with wages to other sectors that might have more profitable products out there, like mining. But that becomes easier if wood is a valuable commodity. So obviously, more use of wood in buildings makes wood more valuable.
There is a lot of global discussion around the role that forests might serve in helping us find solutions to the climate crisis. Do you have observations about this big issue that will be helpful to architects and engineers in understanding the future for mass timber and sustainable forests?
Yeah, trees are hot right now. They're getting a lot of attention. Planting more trees, keeping forests as forests means that carbon is stored, air is cleaner, there's less carbon dioxide out there. But I think the point that doesn't get enough attention is that although trees store carbon, they also release it when they die. So like I said, either of old age, pest disease, fire, other disturbance, and they don't live forever. So this is where forestry has a chance to shine, and which I hope these messages can be implemented or like added to the mainstream tree love that's happening right now. So we target those areas that are at the cusp of releasing carbon to harvest so that it can remain stored in the wood products. And we also make sure that more trees get growing immediately so that cycle continues. So when an engineer or architect chooses wood for their product, they're helping that scenario play out. So obviously, the longer live the wood product, the longer the carbon will remain locked up. And that's why mass timber is a big win for climate change. And something else to consider would be using local wood where possible. And it would be nice to see travel distances minimized between that forest, mill, and construction project.
As you well know, Lacey, one of the reasons that so many architects and engineers are excited about mass timber is because of its ability to lock up carbon and reduce embodied carbon. So can you talk more about timber and forests as a key part of the solution to carbon emissions and climate change?
Absolutely. So we've talked quite a bit about carbon already, but let's break it down into where trees and harvesting of trees comes into this. So a tree starts as a little seedling. It's rapidly growing in its young years, and for every ring of growth, and that's an interesting concept. If you look at it, the cross-section of a tree, you can see different rings, and each ring represents a year of growth. So those rings are stored carbon. So the tree is sucking up carbon dioxide from the atmosphere around it and storing it in its wood. And that will continue for the life cycle of the tree. And eventually, like I said before, the tree will die, it will fall on the ground, and some of the carbon will be absorbed into the soil and some will be released back into the atmosphere. And that's where forestry comes in. So if we are harvesting that tree, we take the carbon out of the forest, keep it from decomposing and releasing back into the air. Of course, we do leave behind treetops and branches so that some material decomposes back into the soil. And of course, some carbon will be released, but it's important to maintain that nutrient component in the soil. Off the tree goes to the various destinations and it gets made into wood products. And then the carbon continues to be stored. So, you know, you hear a lot about forests being a solution to climate change. And that's true. But the whole picture is that by using forests and wood products and keeping forests healthy through management, you can reduce the amount of carbon that gets released into the atmosphere. So you also hear a lot about huge disease and pest outbreaks and invasive species killing trees, and forestry can help with that, you know, like salvaging fire-killed areas, prevent some of that carbon from being released. Of course, there is a lot of carbon that gets released with a wildfire, but making use of what wood is left, that's helpful. Doing thinning in plantations and different forests, you eliminate the declining specimens so that they don't just die there and release that carbon. And harvesting trees when they get over the top of their life cycle before they start to decline and storing that carbon, that again prevents the tree from dying of natural causes and releasing the carbon. So we're not eliminating forests. We're utilizing what's there and allowing space for the next generation of trees to come. And like I mentioned, it's also up to us to make sure that that happens. And the challenging part of growing forests back isn't getting trees to grow. It's getting the right trees to grow. And that's where the science aspect comes in and the whole other team of silvicultural foresters and workers to come into it. So there's different specialties for different stages, and the amount of science and people power that goes into making all of this work is really incredible.
There's currently a lot of discussion about what makes mass timber a more environmentally responsible and sustainable building material compared to other building materials. What's your take on this question?
Yeah, well, to me, it's obvious because I work in the forest sector and I love it here. I get to see each stage of forest management and can say with confidence that we're harvesting sustainably and responsibly, and that the future forests will continue to provide for society. But ideally, everyone would see this with their own eyes and form their own opinions about it. But until then, it's up to us to communicate it to the general public and builders so that they can feel confident about choosing wood. And I just would ask if other material providers can say the same.
Another question that we hear at the Institute is architects and engineers asking, which wood is sustainable and which isn't? I will paraphrase what we hear. If my client wants to know if the wood they are using is sustainable, that is derived from a sustainably managed forest and has the credentials to be sustainable, how do I know that? I just order wood. How do I know where it's coming from?
Well, the easiest way is to make sure that it's a certified wood product. And that means that someone completely independent of the forest that the wood comes from is auditing the practices that happen on that forest every single year and holding them to a standard even higher than is required by provincial and federal laws. So that's the easy way. If you want to become more up close and personal with how a forest is managed, I would say, you know, like I've only ever worked in Ontario's forest, so I'm familiar with how things are done here. And I can say with assurance that if you're buying wood products that come from publicly owned land in Ontario, then that is sustainable wood, because we do have a very high level of laws, standards, guidelines, regulations. And having written a forest management plan for Crown land in the past, it took almost 3 years of my life and filled three giant binders worth of background information and text and tables. It's an undertaking. So that's another way to know, is to know where the wood comes from. And also, there is the opportunity, different organizations are organizing tours for architects and engineers. So get out and see it. Hang out with a forester for a day, and you will probably feel more confident about your wood choices after that.
Lacey, in your experience, how do you think mass timber could benefit the management of forests?
So all value-added markets help. I've been fortunate to see forestry in some other countries, and I have noticed that in Europe, they're quite far ahead of us in the value-added and bioenergy markets. So the issue is that, and I'm speaking about the forests that I work in, particularly in the Great Lakes St. Lawrence area, that there's a poor market for a lower end material. So some species like poplar have limited market, and pulpwood is always a challenge. And the more markets there are for any type of wood products would be helpful. I believe right now that mass timber is focused on spruce, fir, and West Coast pine species. Maybe we can chat more about that and you can share some information. But I hope that innovation can happen and make use of species that we have here in Great Lakes, St. Lawrence Forest, and other areas to keep that wood basket local. That would be amazing. But in any case, using more wood products for construction is good for the forest sector. And when the forest sector thrives, forest management plans can be implemented to their true potential. It's really not uncommon for less than half of the allowable harvest area that's considered and modeled long-term to be sustainable to be harvested. So we're really underutilizing wood as a resource in Ontario and Canada. So that means there's a lot of forest out there past its prime, which will soon be releasing carbon due to mortality.
As a forester, what are your aspirations for mass timber? What if there is a successful mass timber sector or faster adoption of mass timber in Canada? What would you want that to do for a regional community such as yours, the County of Renfrew?
Yeah, well, I would love if when I'm driving around in the big city or even in small towns, if I see construction projects, I would love to see mass timber in them. It makes me a little sad when I see steel and concrete being used in projects that could absolutely be made out of wood. And I would love if, you know, all the buildings were made out of wood around me. And I know that our sector can make that happen. And I know that that would benefit the management of forests and that we could do a better job with the area that we have, you know, make better use of the volume that's there to be harvested. But like I mentioned before, we need mass timber to work with us too. So hoping to see more species being used because, you know, we don't grow West Coast pine here in Renfrew County. So it would be nice to see the wood that's here be able to be put to work in mass timber as well.
Good.
Being a forester is really incredible when you get to actually be in the forest. And I feel lucky that I get to work outdoors as well as indoors. But the feeling that I get when I'm working in a forest and being in a forest, that can be replicated by being in a building that's made out of wood. And I think everyone's experienced that when you're in a building that makes use of wood in the decor, if you can see exposed wood beams, like there's just a feeling that's associated with that. And it's incredible. And I know that there's been research about the benefits of being surrounded by wood, but I feel lucky to get that every day by working in the woods as well. But if I can't be in the woods, the next best thing is to be in a building made out of wood. And I hope that an increasing number of builders, architects, and people responsible for making those choices acknowledge those benefits and can feel confident about choosing wood because it is a renewable natural resource.
And finally, Lacey, what advice would you offer to listeners about understanding how forestry ties into the use of mass timber as a building material?
So every time you admire a beautiful wood product or a building, take a minute to think about how many boots on the ground or brains in the office made sure that that forest that it came from was sustainably managed. I know that I have sat in a mass timber building and wow, it feels incredible to be surrounded by that beautiful product, but even more because I know that it came from a sustainably managed forest. So if you enjoyed the feeling of being surrounded by wood before knowing what we talked about today, I hope that you can enjoy it even more now that maybe you know a little bit more about forestry.
Well, I think that's a very good point to conclude our interview. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks for having me as your first guest.
The Mass Timber Today podcast is produced by the Mass Timber Institute at the University of Toronto's John H. Daniels Faculty of Landscape Architecture and Design, and explores the opportunities and challenges of mass timber with experts in the design, building, and forestry sectors to shed light on the question, what is the future of mass timber construction? You can find the show notes and any references mentioned in this podcast on our website at masstimberinstitute.ca, where you can also view our current projects and subscribe to our newsletter. This episode was edited by Derek Welsman and produced by Sean Shukla at the Mass Timber Institute. We'd also like to give a special thanks to Dialogue's Toronto Studio for their generous sponsorship of this podcast. If you like this podcast, please rate us on the Apple iTunes ranking site. We'd also love to hear from you with any suggestions for other people you would like us to interview. You can reach us on our website.